Listen to this.
Zakawani, the flying winger.
Here's Brad Evans.
It's Steve.
Who is it? It's Brad Evans.
Again.
Happy days are here again. Turning with the drive, it's Steve Zakawani. Evans with the left foot. He's an attacking threat, Brad Evans.
This is so weird.
The party has started.
All right, everybody, welcome to Side by Side Podcast. Our good friend, Steve Zakawani, is not in the building today, so this intro is going to be nice and short. But we are very excited today to welcome Thatch Nguyen into the podcast, someone that I had met not knowing who he was. I'm not in the housing market, not, you know, doing that whole align and
not a
grind
real estate expert also,
I'm not no and so on my Instagram it's mostly it's dogs and cats and like some skateboard videos that pop up because of the algorithm. So Thatch never popped up on my Instagram, and then you know, Ashley told me, hey, check this out, we're going to do this I think really cool collaboration, and we're going to do a quick video, we're going to go down to New Holly. I didn't even know where New Holly was, and I showed up and kind of became connected right away. So welcome to the podcast, Thatch.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for being here. And I think we should jump straight into it. And the first time that we had met, you poured out your story right away.
Yeah.
And I think it's important for our fans as we enter this podcast just to hear a little bit of your background.
Yep.
And talk about, you know, where you came from and how we ended up where we are today.
Yeah. So my background story is that, you know, my dad worked for the U.S. Military in Vietnam, and I was about 5 years old at the time. And of course, I have four brothers. My mom was pregnant with my sisters, and my dad worked for U.S. military as a translator. And in '75, the South Vietnamese communists was taking over, invading South Vietnam to take over the country, and U.S. troop was pulling out. And so his boss said, you guys should leave with us. Otherwise, you know, you guys probably going to get captured. Anybody that Vietnamese that worked for the U.S. government, they're going to get captured.
Right.
And so my dad called my mom and said, hey, you know, we're going to leave Vietnam. Pack your bags, right? And we're going to come get you in a couple hours. My mom was 29. My dad was 34. I was 5. And I had a younger brother. And they got three older brothers. So you can imagine, pack your bag and just go. It was like, what? Where are we going? And so we left with the U.S. troop out of the last plane out of the country. And we were refugee. We had $100 to our whole family's name. And we just going to figure it out. And we tried to go pick up a lot of my family in Vietnam to take them with us, but no one was home. And so we landed in Camp Pendleton in San Diego. We stayed there. The barrack was the shelter. Stayed there for about 2 months, and then Governor Evans from Washington decided to migrate a lot of the refugee up to Washington, and they used Camp Murray as the barracks. And so we was the first family to land in Washington, and we stayed there for about 2 months, and then we ended up staying with a guy named Charles Zettler that lived with him and his mom in Sumner, Washington, which we're going to talk a little bit about, you know, Sumner here a little later down in this interview. But we ended up living in Sumner for a while. And then to fast forward, my family moved up to Rainier Valley. And that's how, you know, again, we're going to talk about the New Holly Field. That's where I grew up at. And I went to school. And then I ended up graduating in 88 from Franklin High School. I got my degree to fix aviation airplane. Graduated in 91, like a bunch of my two other brothers. But I didn't have an inspiration. But I always wanted to be in sales. And I ended up just happened to do real estate. And I happened to do well at real estate. And I started as a realtor in 91. And then fast forward today, I am a realtor. And then I started investing in real estate. I started building houses, building apartment building. And that's what I do today. That's my full-time gig, is just real estate investing and developing. But my passion also and my mission is to contribute, because my dad was a social worker. So when he passed away from cancer, I wanted to keep his legacy going by making a difference to what I call less fortunate people. So my dad, that's what he helped a lot of people. And so that's got me the inspiration to go and help less fortunate people. And that's why today, with working with the Rave Foundation, it aligned with my mission in life. right? And it worked out pretty beautiful because the stuff that we're doing happened to be in my own backyard.
Right.
So,
yeah. I want to ask you about getting on that plane for the first time.
Yeah.
Because that's always intrigued me. Mm-hmm. Right? You're coming from a country where, did you guys speak any English at home?
No.
But your dad did.
My dad did.
Your dad did speak English, right. But he never brought that home at all.
No.
It was just Vietnamese.
Vietnamese.
The whole time.
Yep.
And so you're getting on a plane. Do you have any idea where the U.S. was?
No.
No idea.
My dad knew we're going to the United States. My mom, all of us, we knew we were leaving the country, but we had no idea where we're going, where we're going to land, where we're gonna even going to find shelter, how we're even going to live,
right.
You know. And I only can imagine, I mean, think about it. I'm 53 years old. I have a kid, 17 and 15. Imagine my mom is 29, my dad 34. We have four kids pregnant with the other one. Nowhere to live, no home, no money, and we're going to a country we have no idea where we're going. I mean, that's got to be stressful for my mom and dad.
Yeah, I mean, you're 5 years old getting on a plane. I mean, it's
first time.
First time on a plane, yeah. And you're like, I don't know where I'm going.
Yeah.
What are we doing? You can't even process it at the time. But as you look back, was that a pivotal moment for you? If you like dig deep, was that kind of transition? Can you put yourself in that place of getting on that plane? Or is it kind of just a distant, blurry memory?
Yeah, it's probably, I remember actually getting in the U-Haul truck because we had to like get into the U-Haul truck to get into the airport because the city was getting evacuated. And people didn't understand why people were evacuating, especially the troops. I remember getting into this U-Haul truck with the door closed and a bunch of refugees and our family was in there trying to get to the airport because the only one that can get into the airport were people who are associated with the troops.
Right.
But I remember getting on the plane, but it blurry. But I would say the pivotal point, yes. The first time I went back to Vietnam, I want to say it was probably in 95, 96. This is before even Hudson and Russell was born. And I went back for the first time, and I wanted to see actually where we used to live. So I had my mom and dad take us back to where we used to live because my grandma and my mom now have my aunt. I'm all moving to the city, Saigon, but we used to live more toward the countryside. And that's where we grew up at. So I asked my dad, hey, let's go and visit the old house we used to live in. I want to see where we live. So we went there, and it's this countryside, country road, and we happened to stand in front of the house. And when my dad and I are all standing there, I said to myself, man, if my mom and dad didn't have the courage to actually took us and get on this plane, my destiny would be just like these kids running around right in that neighborhood right there when I'm standing there. Looking at my house, my old house, and because that's the house we used to live in before we left out of the country. And I see all these kids running around, and I say to myself, that would have been thatch right there.
Sure.
So, yes. So, pivot point, absolutely. So, yeah.
And what did that do for you? How did that kind of change your perception on, did it change the way that you thought you wanted to give back at that point, or was there a pivotal moment where you had to build yourself up and do your thing first and then say, okay, now it's my turn to give back to my community and do it in the way that I want to do.
I remember standing there and looking at the house and seeing the kids running around all in that. And I said to myself, man, if my dad didn't have the courage to actually really make this move, I would never be where I'm at today. And the second that came to my mind was, these kids, don't matter how smart they can be, they will never, ever have the opportunity I have in the U.S. They could limit maybe in the countryside $20 a month, $30 a month in income. And here I am making millions in real estate in Seattle. So the opportunity is tremendous. So the third thing I realized was that my dad was a social worker. He did all this, and he's still helping people with no money. And so I said to myself, how much can I impact with all the money I make? And so that's why when my dad passed away from cancer, I realized that I have an opportunity to really like showcase what my dad been doing for all these years. And that's why when we built these fields together with the Ray Foundation, I always try to get a plaque of my dad and put it on all the field we're going to do.
That's so good.
Yeah.
The opportunity for refugees or immigrants to come to the U.S.
Yeah.
I think in the States, we... born here, raised here, we take it for granted.
We do.
About, you know, the resources that we are given here.
Right.
And then, you know, you jump into an Uber, right? The other day I jumped into an Uber and it's an Ethiopian guy.
Right.
and he's got 5-6 kids, and he's you know, doing Uber. He's got 3 or 4 jobs, but he's still like so happy to be in the U.S. just, you know, grinding away, just trying to, you know, the dreams are alive.
Right.
Talk about, I think, being in your position and the perception of the U.S. still being that place of, you know, opportunity to make your dreams come alive.
Yeah. Any minority family to come over here, as much shit that we are going through in the U.S., we still got it 1,000 times better than Vietnam, Ethiopia, China, Philippines, right? Thailand. We still got it 1,000 times better than them. So in Vietnam, they limit how much you can make. The government limit how much you can make. So it don't matter how smart you are, you still limit it. And if you actually make it a lot, then there's also, you know what I mean? Yeah. A lot of,
right? Right, yep.
So we got it good here. So that's why I don't complain. That's what you think about all this politics stuff about, they try to put rent control, or they're trying to, you know, make, you know, tenant, you know, law more for a tenant. We just have to work around it.
Right.
I just deal with it. You know what I mean? If I can come over from Vietnam and off a boat, off a plane, I can deal with tenant rights and this and that. We just have to roll with it. I don't complain about it, because you know what? It's still better than Vietnam.
do you feel, and Steve and I have talked about this on the podcast, that people are put here for a certain reason?
Yes.
And or is it just about you having that opportunity to take hold of what you wanted to do? So I feel like I was like meant to be a soccer player.
Yeah.
I can't imagine a world where I wasn't a soccer player. Or I mean, yeah, I came from, obviously I was born in the U.S. So my parents drove me to every practice. They gave me every opportunity I could get to succeed. Yes, I still had to work hard, but I never played any other sports.
Right.
I feel like somehow I was meant to be doing what I did.
Right.
Do you feel that way? Do you feel like you were meant to be here to like get into real estate and not follow your family per se and what your siblings were doing and how that kind of shaped you and
absolutely. You know, I don't want to get too, you know, religion or, you know, woo-woo. Right?
Oh, you can get as woo-woo as you want. You're good.
Yeah. Okay. So, you know, I'm a big, big advocate on meditation. I have a lot of really high profile gurus around the whole spiritual aspect, and spiritual a little different from religion, right? But all of us, including me, this is not our first time on planet Earth, right? It's the first time in this body, but spiritually, right? This is probably not your first time, Brad. Here, right? I found out for my spiritual person, this is like my like hundreds of time back down on Earth. But this time it happened to be in this body called Thatcher's body. But I realized this time I'm here as a refugee, a real estate developer, making a difference. And so when things and partnership lines up, like when I met Ashley, director of The Rave, when her and I talk, thing click. So when things click and this flow and this things align, I know that everything was already preset. And when it's flowing, we're supposed to meet up at this time for us to work together and build the new Hollyfield with ease and flow. It was already in the path. Mm. We just sometimes resist certain things. You know what I mean? Like when I was raising money for New Holly at the beginning, the first 6 months, it was like calling one friend at a time for $1,000, $500. And I'm like, this is way too much. Something's not right here. If this is this good, why is it so hard? And then I started meditating and new ideas came to me that was more efficient. So to answer your question, Brad, yes, I think that on this lifetime, I was here as a refugee from this parents called Nhung and my mom and dad. And I came here, and then I happened to stumble into real estate, which is already preset. And I was, out of all my brother and sister, I know who makes, like, we were all born from the same mom and dad, right? And they all did their own thing. But how is it that this kid is making millions, have millions of, you know, followers. How is that possible? I think it was already destined. And then the giving back is just, I think it's part of my mission down here on this lifetime to make a huge impact. And that's what my, even my gurus, like I studied under Wayne Dyer for many years and Deepak Chopra.
I love Deepak.
Yeah, me too. I love him. We had him at our event years ago. And I remember I was at an event and I asked, I can't remember either Wayne Dyer or Deepak Chopra or somebody. And I said, how do you uplift people? Or how do you stay positive when there's, you know, 99 people in here, the room is negative, and you're like, you're the only positive person. And I remember one of them says, that all you got to do, my friend, is to make sure you stay clear in your own intention and keep your light bright. Because as long as you keep your light bright, all the 99 other people, you will get them to go dim, to go bright soon. Mm. Just do that. And when you walk in a room, my friend, one day you will know, when you walk in a room and you can actually light the room up by your presence, you're doing your work. So a long answer to your question, my friend, sorry, but that's my job today. I am the lighthouse, and my job today is to come down here on this earth to actually help brighten up more people's lives to do things that they're supposed to do. Like for us, go out there and find a lot of friends that have the same mission as me, make a lot of money, but not to, for them, but to make a difference with the money they're making with me.
Yeah, I think when I look back on my career, I was so focused. And I think you and I started at the bottom.
Yeah,
right? My first year, you know, 2007, I was making $11,000 a year with the Columbus Crew. So $400 a paycheck. I had $400 for rent. I had a car payment, and I'm in the red. My grandma's sending me, you know, grocery cards just so I could, you know, buy groceries.
Right.
And you question, is this what I'm supposed to be doing? Do I want to do this? I could go work at McDonald's and make more money.
Right.
But I had my parents basically saying, you know, you have to see this through and give it your best effort. And I would imagine getting into real estate, you're knocking on doors, right? That was the beginning. Knock on doors and you're questioning, am I doing the right thing here?
Seriously.
What pushed you on? Because for me, it was, I saw, in terms of giving back, I saw Taylor Graham.
Yep.
I saw Roger Levesque. I saw all these guys going to every event that they could here in Seattle, whether it was Make-A-Wish, it was Seattle Children's, and just going and having a good time and understanding like they could perform on the field and they could give back at the same time. Was there a moment for you where you were saying, oh, I got to go into a different career, but I think I could be successful at this and build something where I could give back?
When I started at 21 years old as a realtor, came out of college. And after I went through the training, I see the potential, right? You can help people, you know, with their biggest move in their life, buying a house, selling a home. And if you do it well, you can get paid good money. So the question is, how do I scale it to make good money? And of course, the first 3 years, it was a struggle because I was only making probably 3 transactions a year, which is like nothing. You know what I mean? 20, 30 grand a year. That's nothing. I mean, thank God I lived in my mom and dad's house. But I remember as I met this mentor, he said, if you want to go out there and find business, you got to go out there and actively look for them. And either you can sit, wait for them to call, or you can go out there and knock on doors. So I used to knock on 100 doors a day, 5 days a week for 10 hours straight. And that's how I found all my business. And I remember going out there door knocking, and people was rejecting me. People were saying to me, go learn how to speak English before you come knock on my door. I didn't ask to be, you know, to be prospected. Get the hell out of my porch. And there's many days when I was out there my first year, why the hell am I doing this? But my other option, I can sit around, I get no rejection, and how good that's going to be. Or if I get out there and I do it. But I remember, I tell you, what kept me going was I got a little bit of success. Cut a couple of deals here and there. But I tell you the thing, Brad, that drove me was see my mom get up 6 o'clock in the morning, going to the factory over in West Seattle. She was working at a factory doing imitation crab meat, and they just stuff all the imitation in the bag. And see my mom get up like 5 o'clock in the morning, 6 o'clock to go to work, go to stuff crab all day long, get home at 5:30, 6 o'clock, and then make dinner for the family, making 35, 40 grand a year. And I said, and I was making almost that when I was working at Safeway, when I started adding real estate to my job duty. And to me, what drove me at first, I wasn't even thinking about helping you know, like what you were thinking about, helping a community. But the first thing for me was I wanted to replace my mom and not have her work. That was my number one goal.
Yeah.
And then my second one to go was replace my dad. And then when I did that, then I realized I had really opportunity to do big things. And then the next thing after that was when he passed away was to continue to help less fortunate people. And that's how it all
step by step. Yeah, the domino. What is it about failure that you need to progress to the next level?
Oh, man.
That's a great question.
I have been on this subject lately with Lorenz. You know, when I was coming up, I was the underdog. And I remember people wouldn't give me the time or the place because I was still coming up. And I remember I started the business. I was new in the business. And there was this agent that was been in the business for a while. And he was had more experience. And I went and shadowed him. And I was in his car. And at that time, I had a used Honda. He had a new Lexus, and it was like brand new. And to me, sitting in a Lexus back then, it was like, wow, I'm like in a Rolls Royce kind of thing. And I remember driving to this appointment, and I said to him, man, you're like the most successful agent in this office. One day, I want to be like you, right? Nice car, make a lot of money, right? And he said to me, trust me, you never be like me. It takes years to do what I do to even ever be like me. Believe me, right? And it drove me right there to say, oh, yeah, let me work on my skill set. Let me work on my mindset. Let me go out there and knock on the door. Let me get back up when I fail and do it again. And the best thing for me is I just kept my mouth shut and I put my head down. I just did the work. And then next thing I knew, one year after another, more sale. And then, of course, a few years later, I already passed and became the number one agent in the office. But really never said anything to that agent. I still know him today. And in sports, the same way. You know, Hudson, same way. You know, him and Russell, they play baseball and soccer. They're not the top of the line baseball or soccer. I mean, like, they're good, but they're not up there. And sometimes they don't make the cut on certain rounds. Now, I remember when he was young, you know, he didn't make the All-Star team. His whole entire team made the All-Star team other than him. And he was just disappointed. And I said, Hudson, you know how daddy think. We just got to just put in the work. It drive us to get more sharper than knife, sharper, mm-hmm. sharper than that kick, sharper than that swing better, and just work at it. And you know what? Even if you sharpen it and if you don't make it one day, it's okay. At least you got hungry and sharpen it. And so the one question, Brad, everybody asked me is, how do you keep your kids sharpened? And I say, let them fail. Because the fail will actually help them sharpen the knife. And that's part of the hunger. If you actually always sharpen the knife for them, they have no reason to be hungry.
Yeah.
So I love setback. I love being the underdog. And I'm still today, I'm an underdog. And as much as I do out there, as much as the many followers I have, there's still people that don't see me yet, which is okay.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's okay.
I think for the Sounders, maybe that's a little bit of advice.
Yeah, that's great advice.
It's such a successful club. And I think even for our fans, we take it for granted right. about how good we've been. And then we see a little bit of glimpse of failure. And then the whole thing is a big failure.
Right.
But I think, sometimes you do need a little kick in the backside. You feel failure.
Yeah.
And, you know, the Sounders didn't advance out of this tournament. And now they've had 3 weeks off to kind of sit back and mm-hmm. take a deep, deep reflection on kind of what's going on and feel what it feels like to not be successful. Because oftentimes in our season, it's Saturday, Wednesday, Saturday, Saturday. The games come so fast that you can't really take a deep look at yourself and feel that failure and say, okay, this is going to push me on. And hopefully this last third of the season is what we can achieve.
And I don't even look at it as failure. I look at it as feedback.
Redirection almost.
Right.
You know what I mean? Redirection instead of failure, yeah.
But I tell you, if you're always winning and you don't keep yourself grounded, you just become a fat pig that's basically full, and then you become complacent. So my mindset is I always appreciate my success, but I also have this mindset where I always start at zero every single day because I like to stay hungry. And to stay hungry, you got to actually start at zero, but it's hard to start at zero when you're successful. because the ego say, oh, you're successful. You don't need to work out no more. All right. You don't need to practice sharpening the axe. So I say to Hudson Russell, right, when you guys fail, celebrate it because contrast create clarity.
Yeah. Powerful. The first time we met was in New Holly.
Yes.
And sitting there looking at that field, thinking what it could be.
Right.
I don't think you even had an idea. I had an idea. I know that Ashley obviously had an idea.
Right.
But we were just there about a month and a half ago to see the opening of that.
Yeah.
But for you, seeing that was part of your route.
Yeah.
Right? When you kind of grew up in that area.
Right.
And to step into the Sounders umbrella, specifically with Rave, and say, I want to be a part of this.
Right.
How did that come about?
One day I get a phone call from my friend Mark Dice, right? Big advocate with the Rave. And it says, you got to meet my friend Ashley. You got to meet my friend Ashley. All right. I'm like, all right. Well, you know, if you say so, let's go meet. So we met at this place in Mercer Island. I saw them, my little cafe shop that I would go to. And I met with Ashley, Mark, and I. And then Mark says, look, we're not here to pitch you anything, just so you know. I want to share with you this great campaign that the Sounder and the Rave is doing called 26 by 26. I'm like, okay, so I'm listening, right? And that's, I'm not telling you this to pitch you, to raise money, but here's what happened, right? We had this funding and it fell apart, you know, in COVID. And right now we want to put together a team to see if we can actually put this field together. And we want you to be part of this whole team. And at that time, I didn't realize there was no other team member other than me at the time.
The captain.
I thought there was like 1,000 people on my team. I realized Mark told me, right, the way I was pitching it, all right, we got this great team. And I come to realize, all right, this sounds exciting. Yes, I'm part of the team. I'm happy to do it. And then I realized that you're the team. Right?
The only time that there was an I in the word team.
That's right. Right. Really? But I love it, right? I love being an underdog. And that's how it started. And we started having a conversation like, oh, what does it take to do this? What does it look like? How much money do we have to raise? When do we need it by? What are we doing this for? Who are the partner? And the more I got intrigued into it, the more I'm like, I like this. And I love challenges. And I love giving back. Because New Holly is where I grew up at when I came from Vietnam, which is down the street. I used to do my paper route in that area. And I sold real estate in that whole entire area. I remember those houses getting built by the developer. And I remember everything about it. And then all those kids and all those families were minority who are, if my dad was still a social worker, they would have gone through, you know, that whole thing with my dad and many other social workers out of Seattle. But those kids used to remind me of me. And so it was like all these dots lined up. And the only thing that's going to make this come to life is this vision and raising $400,000. And I was like, let's go. And that's how we started. Yeah.
Was that project a big undertaking?
It was. I knew I have a big follower. All right. I at that time, probably 800,000 people on Instagram, already over me, some people already TikTok and everything else. But it's different because you just don't post it on social media and expect everybody to just come dumping you the money. Yeah, there's got to be some organizing this whole thing. And so I thought, you know what? I raised a couple thousand dollars in the past, $50,000, $100,000. What's $400,000? And so I did my normal way of prospecting, getting money, was calling all my friends. Some say yes, some say no. And I was getting $500 check to $1,000 check, couple $5,000 check here and there. I'm thinking, man, we got to need this money by when? A year from now, we ain't going to make it at this pace. And then I remember sitting down talking to one of my mentors, Saul, and he said, we got to think outside the box. And so I started realizing, you know what? How do I get bigger checks? How do I get bigger ideas? And at that time, I was getting paid to a speaking engagement all around the United States. And I told all my friends, you want me to come speak at your event? You got to have to raise capital, right? Charge everybody. You get then the money you charge, then you just give me so I can just give it to the Rave. And they're like, no problem. So I was getting paid $30,000, $40,000 speak at places, and I donate the money. And now I was getting some traction. And so with that idea, and then we had our big springboard event, right? My real estate business, and we would auction off just great items and great people and all this, and we raised like $200,000 off of that. And then I said to myself, man, those are great ideas. The other way, so old style. And that's how we ended up raising $400,000. It came at the beginning. It seemed like it's, oh my God, it's going to take forever. But once we got going, we ended up raising $400,000 in like probably 3 to 4 months, which is a huge, huge accomplishment, which we didn't think we was going to make.
I think the craziest thing, though, was the idea to buy the house.
Yes.
And that whole process and how that came together. Because you and I walked through that house in Kirkland.
Yes.
And your idea was, hey, let me put all of my resources together.
Yes.
And I think that I can make this work. And the way that you've built your business and the connections that you've made and the consistency and, you know, the not just the connections, but the relationships,
right,
more importantly, right,
right,
that have been around for 10, 15, 20 years.
Right.
That was probably the coolest thing that I've seen in fundraising.
Yeah.
And that's something that I would hope to see others do. And you talked about it at the Springboard to Wealth event.
Right.
Was, hey, this is what we're doing, and we, yeah, have this house. And for our listeners, I think they often see the final product and they see the check. But I think that project specifically is one that you should dive into,
yeah,
because there were so many great partners,
yeah,
and how that kind of came together. The loan, the zero interest loan, the,
right,
you know they're gonna get, the bank's gonna get paid back, and,
right,
and you just have built that trust within the community. How did that idea,
yeah,
come about?
Well, you know, we have already raised $400,000, almost $500,000, and my goal was to actually raise $1 million, right? And we figure, okay, right, how can we actually, you know, raise bigger money faster? Because the other way, is, you know, it's slow. And so one day I had this idea is I'm already fixing houses, fixing them up and selling them, or fixing them up and keeping them, or building new construction. And I already have this whole team of general contractor, you know, tile people, landscaping people. I have all these great people. So they always tell me, hey, man, if you ever do anything cool in the community, keep me in mind. And I don't know what that means, right? But all right. So one day I had this idea, why don't we actually buy a fixer, fix it up, and then we'll donate the money. Now, all my real estate friends that does fix and flip, they looked at me like, man, people are starving out here. You about to do a house and fix and flip, and you're going to donate the money? Right? Serious? You going to do all that work and not take a penny? Yeah, right? They're like, man, more power to you, right? They didn't believe I was going to do it. So, of course, that challenged me. Okay. So what happened was I trained a lot of students in Seattle, over 200 students. And one of the students came to me one day and said, hey, Dad, we found this fixer house up in Kirkland, Washington. And you can get it for like $700,000. And I was like, okay, what would it cost to rehab this? We said about probably $175,000, $200,000, but we can sell this for like $1.2-1.3 million. So that could be a good $300,000 profit. Yes, and I like the style house in a good area. So I'm like, all right. Typically, I would have to put down basically 25% to buy this house and then come up with $200,000 cash to rehab this house. So I'll be in it for a lot of cash. Then I said to myself, let me go talk to my banker. So I went to my friend banker and I said, Charles, I have this great idea I'm doing with the Seattle Sound and the Rave. We're going to do this thing called a 26 by 26. We're building the soccer field. And he's like, okay, tell me. So I tell him about this whole 26 by 26, and we're raising money to build the soccer field, and I want to buy this house, and I want to rehab it. But I'm coming to you, see, will you fund this deal? Will you give me a discount on interest rate? Will you give me a discount on points? Just give me some discount. And he said, I'll do better than that. Why don't I just fund the whole house and the rehab for you for free? I was like, wait a minute. Can you say that again, please? I didn't hear what. He said, yes, I will cut you the check to buy the whole house for $700,000. And whatever the rehab cost is, I'll cut you the check to do that too. You don't have to pay me back. Well, pay me my money back.
Right.
No, you don't have to pay no interest.
No interest.
And so I was like, really do that? Really? He said, yeah, I do it. Because when you said kids, giving back community, I'm all in 100%. I'm here. So I was like, okay. So he was the first person in, and he funded the thing. And I was waiting for the deal to close in 30 days. I went, got all my subs to go out there and give us bids. What would it cost to do the fence? And we have the roof, and you know, I mean, the landscaping, and the, you know, the kitchen. We need a whole new kitchen. We need a new cabinet. We need everything in this house. One by one, all the subs go out there, and we say, hey, we're doing this project. We're doing this for this reason. Can you give me a discount? And then I remember the first person was a Bodian cabinet, my friend, Justin. I do something better for you. why don't I just donate the whole entire cabinet set for the whole entire house for you for free? And I was, serious? He said, yes. The next sub came in. I donated for free. I donated one after another. They all came in and they heard the other guy doing it and they all donated the whole, all the material, whatever they could do for labor, they would toss it in. Whatever they couldn't do, we will pay for it and Charles will pay for it with his money. We had free landscaping. We had free fencing. And then at the end, it was, we were cool. The whole landscape was already done. Then we had all the springboarder. We had all the rave, you know what I mean, people. We had Fred Mendoza that was out there. Ashley, Brad, we were all out there. We were planting all the trees in the plant to finalize this whole thing. The whole thing. And they loved it. They'd rather give me $20,000 with a cabinet than write me a check for $20,000.
Right.
Because it didn't cost them that much. But it just, it's another way for them to give. It wasn't cash, and they loved it. We put the house up for sale, and we sold it, and we ended up raising $300,000 on this house, and we cut the check to the rave. And then that was my new idea, and I said, from now on, if we're going to raise big money, we're going to do it through rehabbing property and selling them because it's already in my wheelhouse that I don't have to do anything different. I just put it in as one of my projects. The sub will just run through this house, anybody else. And all my sub and the bank said to me after that deal, he said, Brad, the next house you do that, Charles said to me, I got you again.
Got you. Yeah.
And he's all the rest of the sub says, when's the next project? Yep. So right now we're looking for the next project so we can do because I made a commitment to the Ray Foundation that in the next, my next goal, because we already raised close to $1 million. So now we're not even thinking about no more. We want to raise another $1 million. For the rave now. So we're going to go for $2 million and we want to think big. And right now we are looking at different project right now. So as soon as we get the new project locked down, I will let you know, my friend.
I have to ask why. Why Rave Foundation? Why does this speak to you?
I got to tell you.
You know, because I think we have a lot of people that support Rave Foundation.
Yes, you do.
But on your level, your reach.
Yeah.
I mean, to be honest, you probably could have gone, you know, with the Seahawks.
Yeah.
You probably could have gone, you know, with the Mariners,
anything.
Right?
Or even just other thing.
Yeah, but why Rave Foundation and the continued commitment?
Yeah. A couple of things. Number one is that so many of my friends that follow me go, I'm so envious of you, Thatch. I mean, I got this nonprofit. You give me $10,000 a year. My goodness, you gave so much money to the rake. Well, how can I get some of that money, right? They all say that to me, right? My friend, My Win, right, said that to me. Can I get like $100,000 of that $1 million, right? And but the first thing is I do help a lot of different nonprofits out there. I do a lot of people don't know I actually provide affordable housing for a lot of people in the community. So I build the houses and I let them stay in my property for a affordable price point. So a lot of people don't know that. And I do a lot of stuff with a lot of the Vietnamese community and the Chinatown community people. I do a lot of that. I just sponsored the big Chinatown event that was happening in Seafair. But why the rave? Number one, my kid, when they grew up, they used to play soccer pretty much. As a minority, we love soccer, right? That's what we grew up on. But my kid played soccer all the way until they got to high school, and then they went and played full-time baseball. But I think the biggest reason why, I tell you the biggest reason why I did it, is because of Ashley. If it wasn't for Ashley, I wouldn't spend all this time and energy and raise this kind of money. So, Adrian Hanau, you out there listening, you got a good person running the Ray Foundation for you. And of course, Brad, right? But Ashley was the main person when I first met. Because I don't even look at Ashley as the executive director of the Rave. I looked at her as she is a great collaborator and a great person. And I love working with Ashley because she has the same vibe, same energy, and we feel aligned. Because when her and I come together, we feel like one. And so I love it. And so when I love something that is, you know, aligned to me, then I put a lot of my energy into it. And so this... raising millions of dollars for the rave takes a lot of energy, but when I work and do stuff that I like with people I like, it doesn't seem like a lot. So I do it purely because of Ashley, you know what I mean? And I really want to make a big impact because Ashley and I had some conversation on the side, and the rave had never had this kind of PR for the rave.
Yeah.
And I'm glad to be able to help put the rave, you know, out there. And I'm looking forward to really having the rave be the example of what nonprofit can do when you get the right partnership. And so, Ashley, I love you.
That's weird. Me and Ashley don't really get along.
We all love Ashley. Oh,
she's in here. Sorry. She's sitting behind me. So what's next? What's next? I know we had the huge opening at New Holly, and that crowd there and that community. Yeah.
It was crazy.
It was crazy.
Man.
It was crazy.
What's next is Ashley and I have been talking about raising another $1 million because I know that you guys has been looking at some field in Sumner, Washington. And I said, if you get Sumner, I'm in. That give me a reason to go raise this other million. Because that's where I grew up when I first landed. It's like a journey.
Right.
So New Holly was one of the journey. It was one of my pit stop. But Sumner, Washington was the first pit stop. So it'd be great to actually put my dad's plaque on that field to say, when we landed, that's the first journey, and we have a field there. And then I grew up in Rainier Valley. And I heard also you guys are working on the MLK field at Graham. And if you get that, then I'm in for that. Because then, again, that was the next benchmark of my journey. New Holly was the other one. And so all these fields have meaning for me more than just field, more than just even for the kids. But it's been all stepping stone come from Vietnam and being where I'm at today. And so those fields, I want to be in. And that's the reason why I want to raise this other million to do those fields, to really let plaque my dad's. Because when my dad passed away, I told him I'm going to, you know, keep the torch bright for him.
Yeah. I think for you, it's about the emotional connection then.
Yeah.
Right? And how that plays into your
decision. My family history and the community.
Family history and community. Yeah. I mean, this has been awesome. I just want to say thank you. From the first time that we met, it was kind of like a little brotherhood.
Yeah.
And like you said, it's a line, not grind.
That's right.
And I think that this speaks true to your words. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why you've been, number one, so successful. But number two, why this machine keeps pushing forward and keeps making an impact. Because, I mean, I use now a Bodian for my house.
Nice.
I use the landscaper for all my plants at my house that you had at your place. And then I, you know, lived with the guy who provided the insulation for the house.
Nice.
And so it's about the connections and how you keep pushing it forward and making sure that, you know, you're doing the right thing when you're trying to make an impact on a community. And I think that's what Rave does, right, is we're not trying to just put fields there. I mean, you've seen it. It's a continuing education wherever we go. So we need help to grow Rave Foundation, not just to build more fields, but to have more of us in the community on a consistent basis, too. I think that's really important. It's like your springboard to wealth. I think you had mentioned it at that event to the crowd, what you were trying to do. And you were like, I need someone to bring me a house.
Yeah.
Someone in this audience, 200 plus people, bring me a house.
Yeah.
Right. Everyone. And you're going to be involved. And the commitment, the events that we had, everyone is bought into that because of where that springboard train is moving and providing people. And then the Rave Foundation train keeps moving because of what we've been able to build. So thank you on behalf of Rave. I know that we're going to keep this thing going. Do you have any words to leave us with today?
I would say that, first of all, I want to say thanks to all my Springboard students and all my friends, because the Springboard students are the one that I helped them invest and made a lot of money. And they also have a heart to give back. And so we have so many of them now across America, like over 2,000 students, and they all contribute to this stuff. And they are excited on the next 1 million. They actually appreciate it so much being at the halftime. They can't stop talking about it. They keep telling me, it's like a movie. It's like a movie. And so they said to me, that's any opportunity you have, we're there, man. We are there to support you 100% what we're doing. I say, great, because we're going to have a lot of opportunities. So I want you to be part of it. I don't want the light to shine for me only. I want the light to shine on everybody that's doing this. So they're very excited. So I guess I would just say out there that the level of your success and happiness is always in direct proportion to the number of people you serve selflessly. So the more people you can serve selflessly, the bigger the impact that you can have in your own life. So
beautiful.
Go contribute.
God, that's a great way to end it. I don't think we can end it any better than that, honestly.
Yeah, perfect. You guys know the drill. Like and subscribe. If you have any questions, I'm sure someone on Thatch's end will answer the DMs. Make sure to give him a follow.
Yeah, social media accounts. Yeah. Do you want to plug those real quick?
So my name on Instagram, Thatch Win. My name on YouTube, Thatch Win. My name on Twitter and TikTok is all Thatch Win. That's it.
Gosh, you claimed them all the Thatch Pretty Wins much. Of the world. Are like, what, who's this guy who took all of our handles away?
Perfect. Well, thank you, Thatch, once again. I know that what we're doing is making a huge impact, and you're, you know, a massive, massive part of that. So thank you, fans. Still a couple weeks till the Sounders play. So
August 20th versus Atlanta.
Let's go!
Buckle up. It's going to be
an
exciting, exciting end to the season. And we'll keep pushing this train forward. And with your help, if you want to get involved with Rave, visit the website. Make sure you keep an eye out for community events. And we'll keep working on this together. So thank you.